I guess the weather has cleared up a little bit for us. The snow seems to be melting, and I think it's time to get started. So we'll begin by taking the roll. Tracy?
We're joined by Reader Member Dr. Bill Wilmot, Senator Howard Nolan. On the other side, Jeff Canizzo, Joe McMahon, John Graziano, all Reader Members. Commissioner Richard Ball from the Department of Agriculture. Also Kyle Flaherty is here, Jill Deboisier, our Registrar Adam Lawrence, Executive Director Tracy Egan, the Assistant at the Agriculture Department, Jacqueline Zub, and also two representatives of Marvin and Company, who will be doing a presentation on the annual financials.
Thank you, Tracy. Item number two, the consideration of the minutes from the meeting of December 6th. The minutes were distributed to everyone. Has anyone have any amendments or changes or questions or corrections? Hearing none, I'll take a motion to adopt the minutes of the December 6th, 2016 meeting. Motion by Member Graziano, second by Senator Nolan. All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes are adopted. Item number three, consideration of the 2016 audited financial reports. We're fortunate to have with us today from Marvin and Company, Heather Lewis, and Joshua Mabee. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Welcome and thank you for coming.
Thank you. So we're going to go through your financial statement. So that's the bound packet that you have in front of you. That's a Marvin and Company right at the top. One thing to point out is page 5 in your packet is loose, and there's another page 5. The loose page 5 is the correct page 5. We just identified that the page 5 in there was incorrect. So the new page 5 that you have at the top is the correct page. The PDF file that you would have received was ordered correctly. So we're going to go through the financial statements. You turn to page 1. This is the independent auditor's report. So this is the part of the financial statements that we're responsible for. So you've engaged us to perform an audit to ensure your financial statements are materially correct. Management is responsible for making sure that they, when they prepare the financial statements, they're materially correct, that they have sound internal controls in place to ensure that those numbers are accurate. Our responsibility is to perform the audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards as well as government auditing standards. And as part of that, we plan and perform the audit. We decide what we're going to test. We use our judgment. We consider your internal controls as part of that process to identify and design our procedures, and then we perform the audit. And page 2 lets you know that we believe everything that we've done has gathered sufficient evidence to provide our opinion. And our opinion is right at the top of page 2. So we believe the financial statements are materially correct and fairly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Unmodified opinion, clean opinion. The section on prior period financial statements, because we are your new auditors in 2016 and we did not audit 2015, there's a little statement in there that just refers to your prior auditor's opinion, which was also unmodified. So again, clean opinion. The other matters area, so there's additional schedules that the Governmental Accounting Standards Board required to be in here. We perform limited procedures. We don't give any assurance on those, which is standard. And then the last paragraph lets you know that there is an additional report in accordance with government auditing standards that you need to consider when you're reviewing your audit financial statements. So we'll go over that report as well. Page 3 starts with management's discussion and analysis. We typically don't go through that, but that is something that management prepares that provides the readers with additional information, is a little bit easier to understand, and lets you know about any factors bearing on the future of the organization. Page 6 is your statement of net position. I'm sure you've seen the information, but it's pretty consistent with last year. Your biggest change is the decision of how to spend the excess funds. Last year it was in the awards payable, this year it was in purse enrichment. So your liabilities, the awards payable liability in 2016 is lower than it was in 15, but your purse enrichment liability is higher in 16 than it was in 2015. The other numbers that are in here that would have changed significantly relate to the you guys being part of the New York State Employee Retirement System. So as part of the employer retirement system, there are certain liabilities and things that you need to record on your financial statement that is provided to you by the state. The state has their auditors come in, they do an audit, they send information out to everyone who's a member of the employee retirement system, and then you record that information on your financial statements. So that is your deferred outflows of resources, your deferred inflows of resources, as well as your net pension liability. So on the liability side, in the long-term liability section, net pension liability proportionate share, $216,000 in 2016. That's up from 2015. Basically, what that's telling you is that the state's ERS pension fund is slightly underfunded, and your share of the portion that they're underfunded is $216,000. You really have no control over the number, but it's, you're now required to report that starting in last year. So that's what that number is. Again, no control over it, but it's required to be on there. And any questions, please just interrupt me.
Why did it go up so much from 2015 to 2016?
It's a couple things. They changed their assumptions. So they had originally expected a higher rate of return of 7.5%. They decreased that down to 7%. And just some assumption changes. What they thought they would earn last year, they didn't actually earn. So then that kind of gets passed through to you.
I see. So they just give you that number, and you plug it into the statement?
Pretty much, yeah. In page 7, pretty consistent with last year, the biggest change is going to be your reader awards and your person enrichment, which is consistent with your accounts payable. So your reader awards are down a little bit, but you'll see person enrichment expenses up. And then your ending net position is the $75,000, which you, is the max that you're allowed to take over year over year. Page 8 just gives you more information on the statement of cash flow, so this lets you know how the cash was used for the organization. Page 9 starts your footnotes. There, if you were to compare these footnotes to last year, there are some additional footnotes in here that maybe were not in here last year, or there's just some more detail in here. One thing to point out on this first page is there are a lot of standards. If you were to look at footnote number 2 and all the new standards that were implemented, so the fund had to implement a lot of new standards this year. None of them really had a significant impact at all to the organization, just based on what they were. And that's pretty much what this discloses. If there was a significant impact, we'd have to communicate that to you, but there really wasn't anything. So if we turn to page 15, the property and equipment footnote, this detail in here is a new footnote. It just provides a little bit more information on what makes up the property and equipment numbers and what the ins and outs were throughout the year. Your biggest expense right now is the software and website for the awards program, so that's going to continue to be the largest item that's going to change on this statement. On page 16, the pension plan footnote number 8, there's a little bit more detail in this. This is the employee retirement system, so you're part of that, so you're required to implement certain things. This has a lot more information than what was in there last year. It's also comparative because it's the second year of implementing this new standard. So that it's just a lot more detailed if you were to compare it to last year. And then if we turn to page 22, the biggest change on your post-employment benefits other than pensions, this is the retiree health insurance that you provide to employees that retire from the fund. The biggest change on this footnote is now that it's 3 years worth of data. In the past, it's been 2 years worth of data. There's a little bit more information in there, but that's about it. Then if we flip to page 25, you also disclose all the new standards that are going to be in effect in the future. So this gives you some information on things that could impact you in the future. The biggest change is the second one, GASB statement number 75. This again has to do with your other post-employment benefits liability. It's just a change that's going to happen in the way you record that. It's not in effect till January 2018, so you still have some time. But you'll hire the actuary that you currently use will assist you in implementing that standard. Basically, it requires you to record a full liability on your balance sheet instead of amortizing it in over 30 years as you do now. So it's just a change in what's required. It's not supposed to have a huge impact on organizations, but I've seen varying reports, so we'll see what happens with you guys. Okay. Then if we flip to page 30, So page 30, this is your report on internal control. So because you're a governmental entity, there's this other report that has to be presented. And what this tells you is that in planning for forming our audit, we consider the internal controls of the organization as part of our planning process. We don't express an opinion on that, so we don't test your controls to express an opinion. That's not the type of audit that you would require. So we consider that as part of the audit process. If we had anything to report, that would be required to be reported in here. If you turn to the last page, page 31, this lets you know in the first paragraph that our audit did not identify any deficiencies in internal control that we consider to be material weaknesses. There's the caveat that there could be material weaknesses out there that we're not aware of, but we did not come across any during our testing. So we didn't have anything to report here. Compliance and other matters, we also have to consider your compliance with valid laws and regulations. During our audit, we did not identify anything that we considered to be material non-compliance that would be required to be reported to you guys. So that pretty much is telling you that this was a clean audit. You know, we didn't have any issues during the audit process, and the results were good, so there was nothing to report here. Josh is going to go through the other report and the letter that we're required to communicate with you guys. Does anyone have any questions about financial statements before we move on?
So the first letter we're going to go over is the one that has the March 21st, 2017 date at the top. This is our required communication with Guardance at the end of the audit, so it basically lists out a couple things that we need to communicate with you. The first paragraph goes over that we audited the fund using professional auditing standards as listed in our engagement letter dated January 13, 2017. Then our second paragraph establishes that management is responsible for the accounting policies being used at the fund, and a listing of these policies can be found in note 2 of the financial statements. This paragraph also states that there were no new accounting policies or changes to any of the accounting policies in 2016 versus 2015. And then the last paragraph on that letter, on that page, lists all the significant estimates used by management. And these estimates are based on management's knowledge and past experiences. We identified a few of the estimates as the first one being the pension plan, which is what Heather kind of went over earlier, which is information that's based on information provided by the state. The second estimate that we identified was the other post-employment benefits, which is based on information provided by the actuary. And the third sensitive estimate we highlighted was capital assets, which is based on the capital asset cost depreciated over an estimated useful life. And then if you flip to the next page, we conclude that the estimates being used by management were reasonable. And then I'm just going to kind of go through the next page and kind of highlight the different areas. So with difficulties encountered in performing the audit, there was no difficulties in dealing with management throughout our audit. For corrected and uncorrected misstatements, here we list any misstatements that we are aware of. In the current year, the payroll expenses are overstated by $34,944, as the annual leave payable was recorded all during this fiscal year, so December 31st, 2016. And this liability hasn't been recorded in the past. Since the liability wasn't recorded in the past, the full amount of the liability ran through expenses in 2016. And this liability was recognized by the prior auditor, and they were aware of it, and they passed on it due to the materiality levels that they had in place. So this year, management decided they wanted to book it, and it didn't affect our opinion at all due to the materiality levels. With disagreements with management, we were pleased to report there was no such disagreements that arose during the course of the audit. For management representations, here we just say that management provided us with a list of representations that they made during the audit. With management's consultations with other independent accountants, we're not aware of any such consultations with any other auditors or any other accountants. With the other findings and issues, we just highlighted that we talked with management prior to accepting the engagement, but this is nothing outside of the normal course of business. For the other matters paragraph, we highlighted in here that we perform in limited procedures over the MD&A, the schedule funding progress for the retiree health plan, schedule is a proportionate share of net position liability and assets, in the schedule of fund contributions, which are required supplemental information. So all of these things are items that we perform limited procedures over, but they're not a part of our actual audited opinion. But we did perform limited procedures over them. It just doesn't end up in our opinion. And then the last paragraph just talks about the restrictions of use, that this information is intended solely for the use of the members and management of the fund, and is to not be intended and should not be intended to be used by any other specified parties. So from there, we can go to the next report we have, which is the examination report. And at the top it says independent accountants report. This report is for the examination we were engaged to do for the fund over the fund's compliance with their investment guidelines. This is required by the New York Public Authority Commissions, which is why we were engaged to do it. The first paragraph describes the examination itself. We list there that we examined the fund's compliance with investment guidelines and requirements of Section 201.3 of Title II of the Official Compilation of Codes, Rules, and Regulations of the State of New York for the year ended 12/31/16. We also highlight there that it's management's responsibility for compliance over investments, while our responsibility as the auditor is just to express an opinion over their compliance. The second paragraph goes into specific accounting or auditing standards that we followed for the examination, and we go into that we follow the attestation standards established by the AICPA and the GAS. This paragraph then points out we examined on a test basis the fund's compliance with their investment guidelines. However, our report does not provide a legal determination of the fund's compliance. In the next paragraph, we then give our opinion that the fund complied with the requirements referenced above, which is the highest opinion we can give for this type of engagement. So everything went fine there. And then the fourth paragraph identifies, in accordance with GAS, we're required to report any significant deficiencies in internal controls, violations, or abuses that could have a material impact on the fund's investment compliance. However, our opinion does not express an opinion on these internal controls over compliance. And we reported that there were no internal control matters that we are required to communicate to you, or nor did we find any that we think could be tightened up. And then the last paragraph on this page just lists that states that our examination is not to provide any insurance as to the income from the investment activity, but it's more just for the investment compliance side. And then the last page just references that the report is intended for management and members of the fund in the office of the state controller, and it's not intended for any other parties.
That's our audit for you. Any questions?
Okay, I think we could call for a motion to accept the audit report for 2016. Motion by Mr. McMahon, second by Mr. Canizzo. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
The report is accepted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You were guys were a pleasure to work with.
Good job. I think I also have to mention that it's an excellent reflection on staff as we switched auditors and came through it with flying colors. I want to thank the whole staff for doing excellent work here.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is the February financials year to date. Jill?
Okay. Well, it's only got January and February in it, so it's a little bit, doesn't have a whole lot. But basically what you can see by looking at it is that revenues are down. As we had discussed in the last board meeting, a lot of that, actually all of that is attributed to the Resorts World VLT revenue. You can look at page 3 of the report, which shows the actual VLT breakdown, and the first part of that shows 2016 on the top, in like a yellow, a gold, a goldish area is what we had budgeted for 17, and then the green area is what's actually happening in 2017. When we put together the budget for 2017, we had budgeted, we had anticipated a decrease. So we had budgeted for a 13% decrease, which is what we kind of anticipated. It's actually, January was 14% decrease, and February was a 20% decrease. So it's actually coming in lower than what we had budgeted our revenue. So it's going to be a year where we have to pay close attention to our money coming in. You know, it averages out to a 17% decrease versus a 13% decrease. I'm hoping that improves. There has been some discussion about some additional machines possibly going into Resorts World that will help increase, bring the revenue back up, hopefully to maintain that 13% decrease that we had budgeted for. But, you know, it kind of remains to be seen. This early in the year, we don't really know what's going to happen, but we've got to watch very closely to our revenues and our expenses for this year. That's my comment on revenues. To complement that, or the other half of that, is the award expense. And for January and February, the award expense has actually been higher than what we have budgeted for, and even a little higher. It's really comparable to last year, but what we had last year was January through March, we had some really high award expenses that weren't usual. That, you know, if you looked at the last 5 years, the trends in those 3 months were pretty, they were, you know, not a large percentage of award expense. I think due to the mix in the racing and the types of races that are being raced, that they're only being raced at Aqueduct right now. So even though it's not a huge amount, dollar amount, it's higher than what we had budgeted for. But again, you're only looking at the first 3 months. But again, we have to pay close attention, because in those 2 months we spent $170,000 more than what we had budgeted in the award expense for those 2 months. So those two factors, having, you know, 120 less than budgeted in revenue and having 170,000 more in expenses, it means that, you know, we're hopefully that trend, I don't anticipate that trend is going to continue through the year. I think it will level out a bit, but we want to make sure that we're aware of it and that we're looking at it very closely, which, you know, we are. And that's basically it. Everything else is there. The other items, the admin, promo expenses, are all reasonable to what they've been in the prior year and into what we've budgeted for. Jeff?
So just so I make sure that I have this number right, because it's important for me to know, the dollar difference from Resorts World machines for January and February this year, in contrast to last year, is roughly an $88,000 number. We're down $88,000.
No, that's actually looking at our budget.
To budget.
Yeah, if you look at the first number, the $2,079,000, that was last year.
Right.
This year it was 1.7, so it's about 300,000 less. 394,000 less than last year at this point, for January and February. If you were to just, now you're looking at, there's several factors. You're also looking at, if you look in the green section, this year we have the 5,090 machines, whereas if you look higher up, right under the 2016 revenue, you'll see that, like, last January we had 5,385 machines that the revenue was being based on. This year it's only the 5,090 machine. This year it's $370 is the average, the net win per machine. Last year it was 406. So those, that's pretty much the breakdown there.
So it is it's a $300,000 number.
It's almost a 400,000, yeah, for the 2 months.
Right, and there's a couple. I would make a few comments about that. One, it's obviously because we lost 460 machines, but the win per machine you can see in her green box.
Excuse me, Jeff, could you speak up for the tape recorder over that noise?
Sure.
Thank you.
The wind per machine in January is 370, and then in February is 395. If you were to contrast those numbers to last year's wind per machine, those are significantly down, which is why, another reason, on top of the fact that we lost 460 machines, that we're down. But the interesting part is that in doing my own studies on this, it appears that these are the lean months for resorts world, so hopefully those numbers tick in the other direction as the months go by. But
right, we're hoping that, you know, the machines, the net wind per machine goes up, and maybe if they put in more machines, then we have that additional revenue from that as well. I also want to bring out, because we did discuss it at the last board meeting, that there's also the Nassau OTB and the Suffolk OTB, where they've got VLT machines that the fund is receiving a percentage on. It's 0.5% of revenues. Unfortunately, what comes into play there is it's capped at 2013 revenue levels. And if most of you can remember, in 2013, our VLT percentage was 1.25% until October 28th, when it was increased to 1.5%. So most of 2013, we did not have the higher revenue numbers that we had in 14, 15, and 16. So at the very most, we'll be brought back to a 2013 level, which wasn't a great year for us. It was a year that we didn't have any supplemental, and I think we were within $22,000 of not even being able to make our budget. So it's not good news. We can't really rely on the Nassau and Suffolk money to really do anything more than to assist us from going below those levels, if we can even use it. At this point, I've looked at January and February, and we're still exceeding the 2013 level. So even though we're almost $400,000 less in revenues, they're still higher than they were in 2013, adjusted for inflation. So, Joe?
I'm okay on that, I follow that fine, but we're talking about, I thought I heard you say, and this bears it out, that our paid out awards are higher, even though we have less racing days this year as opposed to last year. Are we got more starters, more New York Red starters? What do you think is, how do you see that trend going along? I mean, if our revenue continues the way it is, can we anticipate that even with less days of racing, that we're going to have more New York Red starters and more New York Red earners?
I think that the level, the race days and the number of races has been pretty consistent for January and February as compared to last year. I think what it is maybe the ratio as far as New York Red's actually running. I think there's an increased push to get the New York Reds either racing earlier or just that because they're to stay in New York and race in New York. Jeff, I mean, some of that maybe has to do with NYRA's NYRA's thinking, and maybe you can shed a little more light on it.
I just
want to say I think it's kind of, it's just an abnormality in the first quarter, and I think it will level out in the end. That's the way it has done in the past. So I don't anticipate that this increased award expense is going to continue through the year and keep going up.
So you think the fact that during March we only race 3 days a week for the most part,
which is the same as last year.
So the same as last year.
The race days, this is totally based on starters, is that the New York Red population has become more prominent for winter racing in Atlanta than it has in the past, which is why we're seeing the award numbers go up. So now we're more dependent on our population to make winter racing.
If you look at the races January, February, there's a heavy dependence on New York Red races, but also they, wrote you know, allowance or claiming races at like the 12-5 level and very low levels. And a lot of those races, they were open but filled with many New York breds.
Just so curious, I haven't do this recently, I can spit out this number. 48% of Nyra's starters for the entire year are New York bred.
So far this year?
No, all last year, for last year. 48% of Nyra starters were state bred. And Aqueduct, that number's significantly higher. So that's completely the reason. This is that in every race that they're running, awards are being earned because the races are full of New York bred horses. I totally agree with Jill that I would imagine that you're going to see this, you know, decline as horses come in from around the country.
What we compare it to as well, I mean, if you look at it to last year, it's $9,000 within what we paid out in awards last year. What I'm talking about is what we had budgeted. We had thought that that first quarter was kind of a fluke last year, and so when we put the budget in for 2017, they were reduced. They shouldn't have been reduced. They ended up they were similar. But I think that there's enough in the other months. You know, we didn't do that for every month. We just did that for the first two or three months. So I think you'll find that'll all level out, and it'll be a little bit more consistent to what we actually are doing for the other 9 months or 10 months.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that this is a 2 month window when we're very prominent in racing. When we go to look at this at the next board meeting, I wouldn't be surprised that it's dramatically different. Mm-hmm. That's just my gut take on this. And, you know, and looking at Aqueduct, I got here in front of me. 52% of last year's Aqueduct starts were just taken on. So it'll be interesting to see if, I'm assuming that number's going up too, for this year, why we have this. And then the second related comment, back to the financials. The Nassau Genting situation, I can tell you, is very fluid, and that there very well could be changes that happen over the next, through this budget cycle, which is about to end in a matter of days, and potentially with machines coming back that are part of an OGS gaming commission process to get us machines back from Genting. So I would imagine that there'll be more news of that at the next meeting too, on what happened there or what's changing. But the short end of it is that we lost 460 machines compared to last year.
Any other questions?
And accept the motion to adopt the financials, the February year-to-date financials, as explained by the comptroller. Motion by Mr. Graziano, second Dr. Wilmot. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
The report is accepted. Item number five, consideration of expenditure of the 2016 surplus as purse in Richmond for Finger Lakes and Nyra. Jeff?
Thank you, Chairman. I believe that at the last board meeting in December, we had a dialogue about initiating the purse in Richmond committee to looking at formally approving this measure. And due to industry circumstances that surrounded Finger Lakes Racetrack and their competition to the Del Lago Casino, and the outcomes of them losing significant monies that they distribute in purses, and the fact that New York Reds are the prominent source for Finger Lakes Racing, right? So it's a cyclical relationship, meaning without the New York Red program, there would be no Finger Lakes Racetrack. Without the Finger Lakes Racetrack, the New York Bred program absolutely would not be what it is today. So it is very much in the breeders' interest to support Finger Lakes and make sure that they're healthy and strong and do everything we can to move them forward. So the purse enrichment committee, along with the breeders here in New York, thought that it would be a very good idea for the fund to support Finger Lakes in our best abilities. So in saying that, we looked at the fact that there was a surplus in fund revenue, and we had made the recommendation that that surplus in fund revenue from last year, 2016, be used as purse enrichment for Finger Lakes to keep them moving forward the next 2 years. So that's our recommendation, and that, correct me if I'm wrong, but that dollar amount was roughly a $2.5 million number from the fund. So out of that $2.5 million, 60% of that would go to Finger Lakes, which is $1.5 million, and the other million would end up going to NARA that would support various programs that we've been behind. Their two-year-old New York Bred Awards program that we did the last few years, which has been very successful for the breeders and owners, in addition to the state's money there at NARA as well. So that was our recommendation. I don't know if Joe, if you want to chime in, or Bill further, but it's very much in the breeders' best interest to help Finger Lakes Racetrack, and this money that's going there is certainly in a time when they need that help, and we wanted to do what was best for everyone in the breeding community, and we feel that by distributing this surplus of money from last year, it would do so.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff? Or I want to thank the committee for their excellent work. I take a motion to accept the recommendation of the Purse Enrichment Committee for the year 2016.
So moved.
Dr. Wilmot, second?
Second.
Second, Commissioner Ball. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
The recommendation is adopted. We have a few items of litigation and potential litigation that we should discuss in executive session. Can I have a motion to move to executive session? Graziano, second, Commissioner Ball. All in favor?
Aye.
We will now move to executive session.